This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Sundance Film Festival is considered one of the most important film festivals in the world and the premier showcase for new independent films. This year's festival wrapped up on Sunday. Last week, we brought you a couple of onstage interviews from Fresh Air's visit to Sundance, including a talk with our film critic John Powers. But when we spoke, the festival had just begun. We asked John to come back today to tell us about the movies that he saw there. Let's start with his overview of this year's festival.
I think that this year at Sundance could probably be accurately described as the year of competence. Normally when you go to Sundance, when you see the films, there are a few that stand out, and then a few in the middle, and then a lot that aren't very good. Whereas this year what was surprising was that probably the very best films weren't as good as they've been in some other years, but the very worst films were much better than the worst films are in usual years. So this was a year where when you would go to the competition films for sort of fiction features, almost all of them had something to recommend them. You know, every film either had a wonderful performance or was really nicely shot or had a good script. And although none really stood out as being clearly the best films or films that you had to see, nearly all the films we were seeing.
So it was a reasonably pleasurable experience to go to the movies?
It was an okay experience. I mean, somehow the problem with film festivals, and especially Sundance at the moment, is that you want more than that. I think that the sort of problem that Sundance has at the moment is that it's become such an important film festival, and in terms of launching careers and getting media attention, that somehow to see a film that's perfectly fine if you saw it in Los Angeles or New York or Chicago somehow seems disappointing when you're in Park City, Utah. And I think that's something that the festival, you know, really can't do much about, because they're choosing the best films they can every year. Some years they're better than others. But you have this huge influx of people into this small Utah town to see films. And so when the films aren't really special, there's a general sense that they're even worse than they actually are. In fact, a lot of films I saw, I would have been perfectly happy to see in the course of my normal life. But somehow, flying off to a different city, walking through snow, to then see a film that's just okay somehow makes you slightly unfair, I think, to the film.
Let's look at the award winners at Sundance this year. The feature film winner is called Three Seasons. It's described in the Sundance program as the first American film to be shot in Vietnam since the war. What's the movie about, and what did you think of it?
It's a film by a young 23-year-old Vietnamese-American named Tony Bui, who was born in Vietnam and then moved at a very young age to the United States. And it basically interweaves a series of stories. There's one story about a Ciclo driver guy, basically a person who peddles tourists around Saigon, as it's always called in the film, who falls for and becomes fascinated by a prostitute who caters to tourists. There's another story about a woman who's a flower seller and flower picker in these beautiful lotus ponds, who gets involved with a monk who has leprosy, and basically she becomes his sort of conduit for his ability to tell poetry. There's another story about a young child who actually carries around those boxes that cigarette girls used to have, selling things to tourists. And finally, there's a story about Harvey Keitel, who plays a Viet vet who's coming back to look for his daughter. And basically, it sort of interweaves these stories to kind of try to paint a portrait of contemporary Saigon, which is sort of a city that is both definitely Vietnamese yet being touched by the West. It's an interesting idea for a film, and I should say from the beginning that Tony Bui is a very talented young director and writer. The film has enormous delicacy and tact. There's a tenderness to the movie, which is genuinely nice, and the film is very, very beautifully shot by Lisa Rensler, who won the Best Photography Award at the festival. I mean, it actually really makes you see Vietnam in a way that very few films make you see it. Having said all those nice things, I would also say that the film is very, very thin in a way, that most of the storylines that you get are storylines you've seen before. So that, for example, the Ciclo driver interested in the prostitute instantly calls up thoughts of, for example, the film Mona Lisa. Similarly, the story about the young child who's selling things to tourists, you know, there are many, many, many versions of the young kid sort of out on the streets from Pixote to lots of others. So most of the storylines are, in fact, rather familiar and kind of thin. But it's the kind of film that often does win at Sundance because people feel very, very good watching it. It gives you a little bit of the world. It's very, very affirmative, probably too affirmative, considering what's actually going on in Saigon at the moment.
Harvey Keitel not only co-stars in it, he's the executive producer. Any idea why he took on this movie?
Well, actually, you know, that it's a very funny thing because he gives the worst performance in the film.
Really?
Yeah, he does. It's a very strange thing that all the Vietnamese actors are extremely good, whereas Harvey is kind of phoning this one in, although he phoned it in from Saigon, which is, I guess, impressive. I think that to his credit, he's one of those people who really does look for new talent. I mean, and, you know, to choose someone almost at the opposite end of the spectrum from Tony Bui, who's made a gentle film about Vietnam, he was the person whose interest got Reservoir Dogs made and Quentin Tarantino launched. He actually is one of the few sort of big-name actors who consistently goes out and tries to find young people and work with them and try to launch their careers. You know, lots of other people don't do that.
The film that won for Best Documentary is called American Movie, and it's about someone trying to be an independent filmmaker. It sounds very inside.
Well, it actually, it sounds as if it would be inside, but in fact, the truth is, it's kind of outside because the guy who's trying to make the film lives in Milwaukee and is sort of a 28 or 29-year-old guy's guy who wants to make a horror movie. He's working on a film called Coven, which is actually Coven, but he calls it Coven. And basically, he wants to make the kind of trashy, bloody movies, you know, that you'd show at drive-ins. And the film follows his attempt to do this through a whole series of ludicrous circumstances, inept staging, working with people who have no clue what's going on, working through laughable things. And what's nice about the film is it shows you a guy with the bug. I mean, the hero of the film, Mark Borchert, I believe his name is this incredibly enterprising, energetic, funny guy who swears a lot but really, really, really is driven to make this movie, as ludicrous as the movie may seem to us as we're watching it. And what's nice about the film is it actually captures somebody who's in the state of being captured by the desire to make films. You know, what I like less about it, I think, is two things. One is that it's, like most films, it's too long. So you kind of get the film before the film completely runs out. And the second thing is that there's a problem with a lot of the films I saw at Sundance this year, and probably with a lot of American culture at the moment, is there's a certain kind of addiction to cuteness. There's a way in which we like everyone to be quirky and offbeat in movies or television shows. And like when you watch this film, often things seem to be put in just because somebody says something really quirky or offbeat, and the audience gets a big laugh, but you don't really need it for the film.
So did you walk away from this film thinking that the interesting person was the subject of the film, the guy trying to make this cheap horror film, or the filmmaker who made the film about the guy trying to make the cheap horror film?
What's interesting about the film is that the guy who's trying to make the cheap horror film, his name Mark, and his buddy Mike, who seems to be sort of in a stupor through the entire film, are actually extremely fun and funny to watch. I mean, they kind of like are the real-life version of Wayne's World or something. So they're actually kind of interesting. But the real talent in the film is the director, Chris Smith, who actually followed these people, saw the potential in the story, and then made a documentary that I think whose great virtue, perhaps, among all of the Sundance documentaries over the last few years, is that it's funny. There's a great tendency in documentary to go for the most earnest and overbearing kind of thing. This film isn't particularly good for you, which I think is part of its charm and maybe part of its limitation, because I think it plays a little bit cheaply to the audience's desire just to be entertained.
Was this a big year for documentaries at Sundance?
Well, according to the New York Times, this was the year of documentary at Sundance.
Yeah, that's why I asked. I read that too.
Yes. And it's funny how in sort of the way the culture works, that it only takes one or two articles by famous papers to make something the year of documentary at Sundance. The truth is, I think the reason why it became year of documentary at Sundance was because the features weren't as spectacular as they have been in other cases. And so people are looking for it to be the year of something. And in this particular case, it was the year of documentary. The other reason was there were two very hot documentaries at the beginning, films that people were actually almost brawling to see. One was called Sex, the Annabelle Chong story, which was about a Singaporean porn actress whose great claim to fame was she made a video in which she had sex with 251 men. The other film was called American Pimp, which was by the Hughes brothers who made Menace to Society and Dead Presidents. And it basically was a sort of MTV-style talking head documentary with American pimps. And because of their kind of racy subject matter, these were the films that were most in demand, and people really wanted to see them. And I think they might have given the sense that this was the year of documentary, because people really were fighting to get into those screenings.
Or it might just prove that people are always interested in sex.
Yes, people are always interested in sex. I realize that if I ever make a film, I want to have the word pimp in it. Watching people push just to get into something with the word pimp in, I realize this is the winner, Terry. I think, in fact, perhaps Fresh Air could change its name.
To Fresh Air Pimps?
Yeah, Fresh Air Pimps or Fresh Pimp or Pimp Air. I'm not quite sure, but we can work on it.
We'll work on it.
My guest is Fresh Air's film critic, John Powers. We'll talk more about the Sundance Film Festival after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Fresh Air's film critic, John Powers. He's just back from this year's Sundance Film Festival, the showcase for new independent movies. So who was the big winner in terms of the big deal? Getting the agent and the distributor and the big money package.
Yes. Well, I think what's actually very funny about Sundance is that I think the programmers choose rather honorably films they think are the good films. Yet once the festival starts, most of the talk turns to which people are going to make it as stars, which films have sold for the most money. This year, the big seller was a film called Happy Texas, which was basically a reworking of Some Like It Hot. You might recall that film in which two musicians fleeing the mob pretend to be women. Here it's two ex-cons fleeing the police, wind up in a small Texas town called Happy Texas, and they pretend to be gay organizers or gay organizers of sort of talent shows for like 5 and 6 year old girls. And basically this follows their zany adventures. The thing that can be said on its behalf is that it contains a genuinely hilarious performance by Steve Zahn, who actually won a special prize at the festival for it. And he's so funny that it almost makes you forget how mediocre the film actually is. He's just hilarious. The problem with the film, I think, for many people who saw it, and I should say that it was a huge hit with the actual audience, but for critical types like myself, is that I couldn't see how in any way that it was an independent film, except for the fact that the lighting looked kind of cheap. I mean, if you had told me that Touchstone Pictures or 20th Century Fox was bringing out this film, I would have said absolutely yes, because there's nothing in the film that's not completely and utterly mainstream and isn't desiring to be completely and utterly mainstream. So it's kind of shocking that not only was this film the big seller, but it was also the film that a lot of the audience genuinely loved. It got standing ovations. People went crazy. And it kind of led me to the suspicion that really at Sundance, still the vast majority of people who go to see independent films really want to see mainstream films, but just with a bit of patina of independence.
Well, who is the audience at Sundance outside of the critics that are there?
Well, it's a peculiar mixture of people. There are some local people from Utah who are there. There are people who fly in, and it's sort of part of their year to go to film festivals. I mean, that's sort of a subculture that's never really been explored. But you actually do find them as you go to festivals. There are people who will actually fly in from different parts of the country just to be at festivals and see the films. Then there are basically industry-type people, agents and producers and all the rest. And those are the people who are always on cell phones. And, you know, you actually do the stuff that seem like movie parodies but actually happen in real life at Sundance, where you'll see a table where all 5 people are talking on their cell phones. And these people are, like, very, very busy and earnest and, you know, to be frank, rather pushy. Then you have the sort of media types like myself who've descended on Sundance because now that it's an important festival, every publication in the free world feels it has to have at least one person there to cover the festival in case something's going on. So you mix all of those people together and you then have the audience. And so it's a very strange and skewed audience. I think the locals tend to be the most generous audiences. Probably the media types tend to be the least generous audiences.
That's you.
And then that's me. And in fact, may I say that's a good thing. I think one of the peculiar problems of the independent film movement in America right now is that there's a kind of terrifying level of boosterishness. And what I mean by that is that you have all these filmmakers trying to make films. You have Sundance, which is there to promote the films, and that's actually its job, and it's doing a good job of basically promoting independent film. But then you also have people whose interest it is financially to promote independent film, and that's the producers and agents and entertainment lawyers. They all want to get hooked up with independent film. So once a film seems to be doing well, they're all going to push it as though it's the greatest film ever made. Then you have the independent film press with things like Movie Maker Magazine and Filmmaker Magazine. And what's curious about that kind of press is that it's also sort of trade paper boosterish. So what you don't find, except for people like me, I mean, which is to say, are people saying, wait a second, is the stuff we're seeing really that good? And what's kind of unfortunate about being a film critic at something like Sundance is that you're sort of like the spoiler at the party. Because people will say, have you seen anything good? And you'll say, well, no, nothing really very good. You know, but there's some young directors here with some talent. But that seems so insufficient in relation to the amount of hype that's going on from the media that isn't critics and the amount of pushing that's going on from the publicists and all the rest. So you sort of feel as if you are kind of negative or cynical in saying that a film like Three Seasons isn't a great film. You know, it's a perfectly fine film. Tony Bui, who won, has a lot of talent, you know, that I would look forward to seeing his next film. But is his film a great film? No. And usually at Sundance, that's what happens. You have critics sitting around saying these films aren't great, and everybody else basically as their job trying to say that they are.
What won the audience award this year? The audience always votes on its favorite film.
Yes. Well, there were two audience awards. One of the winners was Three Seasons, the Vietnamese film that we've talked about already. The other winner was a film called Genghis Blues, which was actually, I think, one of my favorite films of the festivals. It's a documentary about a blues singer and a group of others who go to Tuva to basically sort of get involved in what's known as Tuvan throat singing, a kind of singing that I won't attempt to duplicate on the air for our listeners. But in fact, what was wonderful about this film was it's basically just these couple guys who wanted to make this, who were interested in Tuva because of a documentary they'd seen where Richard Feynman, the physicist, had talked about Tuva and become fascinated by Tuva. Meanwhile, there's this blues singer who's also interested in Tuva, and so they all sort of fly together to Tuva to experience life in this small little country of 200,000 people just in between Russia and Outer Mongolia. And there's a kind of looseness and good-heartedness to the film that I really, really liked, and I would highly recommend anybody to see it. The audience loved it, and they were right to love it. It's just a wonderful film.
Did you see any movies that you thought were really fine films that you'd like to alert us to because you think that they'll be opening theatrically?
Well, actually, I think in lots of ways, the film that I thought was the most interesting film there was a commercial film called Guinevere. It's coming out later this year. It was written by Audrey Wells, who wrote a film called The Truth About Cats and Dogs, which was pretty badly botched, I think, when they made it. And Guinevere is a film about something that I'd never really seen before, which is a film about the relationship between a young woman, of a well-born young woman played by Sarah Polley, who's going to go off to law school, who falls in love with a kind of pseudo-bohemian photographer played by Stephen Ray, who's perhaps 30 years older than she is. And basically the film tackles the question of the relationship between older men and younger women. Now, this is a common thing in movies. I mean, when you go see something like A Perfect Murder, it sort of goes without saying that Michael Douglas will be with Gwyneth Paltrow. You know, every young woman in the audience, I think, shudders at the thought of actually having to sleep with Michael Douglas in the same kind of way that, I've seen women literally cringe in Woody Allen movies when someone like Elizabeth Shue has to look as though she's just sexually enraptured by Woody Allen. So usually when you see this kind of relationship in a film, what's strange is the film doesn't even notice that there's something odd about it. Okay. What this film does is it basically shows you this kind of relationship in a kind of amusing fashion about how a young woman gets involved with this older guy, and then does the thing that I think that a male film, if it noticed that it was doing this, wouldn't do, which is basically it shows you what's queasy and humiliating about the relationship. It shows how a young woman can be involved with an older guy and how they're both slightly embarrassed by it. But at the same time, it also shows that there's something in it for both of them. So that for the older photographer played by Stephen Ray, who's basically a sort of failed photographer at this point in his career, who's sort of a sort of pseudo-bohemian, what he finds in this young woman is someone who reflects back his own idealized image of himself. And the movie's sort of rather clear about this. We don't admire the Stephen Ray figure because we know that he actually does chase after younger women precisely because they hold him in a kind of awe. But at the same time, the movie doesn't hate him for that because it shows how the younger woman is actually getting something from this relationship with the older man. He does expand her horizons. He does give her increased confidence. He does show her more of the world than she might otherwise have gotten. And I think if a man had made this film and was actually trying to deal explicitly with the subject of older men and younger women, he'd be more likely to hate the older man and to really punish him, whereas this film is actually finally rather forgiving toward him while at the same time showing all of his limitations.
My guest is Fresh Air's film critic John Powers. We'll talk more about the Sundance Film Festival after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Fresh Air's film critic John Powers. He's just back from this year's Sundance Film Festival, the showcase for new independent movies. Do you think that independent films, John, are a good place now for women to write, direct, and act in, a place where you can do things outside of the conventional female stereotypes in mainstream motion pictures?
Yes, I think at the moment that independent films are probably best for actresses. What's curious is that Hollywood still doesn't know what to do with actresses, so that you actually find that there are very few good roles for women in Hollywood films. In independent films, there are lots of great roles for women. So it's not at all surprising that someone like Sarah Polley will get the best role of her career in an independent film, or that the stage actress Janet McTeer would get a great role in a film called Tumbleweeds, which is another film that won a prize at Sundance this year. There are just good role after good role after good role in American independent films for actresses. It's a little trickier for writers and directors. Now, it should be said that what makes this tricky is not actually has almost nothing to do with Sundance itself, the festival. I mean, Sundance, the festival, has been, I think, consistently sort of in the forefront of having women programmers programming films by women writers and directors. But once the films show, it's interesting to see how the kind of old boys network takes over in the world of distribution. An example of that for me would be that there were two films I saw essentially, probably within a few hours of one another. One was called Judy Berlin. It's by a young man named Eric Mendelsohn. And it's a perfectly fine film about Long Island. It's kind of strenuously laboring to make Long Island magical. And it has some good parts and it has some bad parts. And it's a very literary conception. And as I walked out of the thing, all the distributors were talking about what a great talent Eric Mendelsohn was and how he was somebody who basically you'd want to hook up with because he really had vision and he really had all these qualities. A few hours later, I saw a film called Getting to Know You by the woman named Lizanne Schuyler. And it too was a little bit literary. It's sort of a film that brings together several stories by Joyce Carol Oates. And the dialogue is perhaps a little too written, very much like the film Judy Berlin. But coming out of that film, what the distributors and the people I knew in the industry were saying was very, very different. They're saying, oh, the film was cold. It cared too much about style. I couldn't get into it. It was too literary. And basically, if you ask me which is the better film, I would say Getting to Know You is clearly the better film. There's more control of tone. It's actually pushing for deeper and more complicated things. It's the better film. Yet out in the world of the industry, you could see that people, I think, could see how Eric Mendelsohn fit the image of the kind of visionary young filmmaker who's a man. But Lizanne Schuyler didn't fit the image of what the ideal woman filmmaker is, which is basically someone who makes kind of these heartfelt films about family and relationships. In fact, she wasn't fitting the image of what the hip or hot young woman filmmaker should be. And so I think one of the things that's happened over the years is that men are supposed to be visionaries and women are supposed to feel deeply, which just brings us back to like the oldest cliches of the culture.
It must be interesting, John, after the Sundance Film Festival is over, to see how everything plays out in the marketplace.
Yes, well, it is very interesting to see how things work out. Over the last few years, the films that seemed good have inclined to be purchased for a whole lot of money, and often they didn't make that money back at the box office. This year, what was interesting was that a lot of films were bought, but aside from Happy Texas, which reportedly went for $10 million, most of the films were getting far less money than they had in preceding years. Distributors still want to be involved with the independent film, but I think they now realize that if you pick something up for $3 or $4 million, it might well have a difficult time competing in the marketplace. You know, if you take a film like Next Stop Wonderland, which was a film that sold for $7 million last year, the problem it had was that once you leave Sundance, it was going to be put in the multiplex next to The Truman Show, Saving Private Ryan, Armageddon, and There's Something About Mary. And in that context, a film like Next Stop Wonderland looks much less commercial and attractive than it did when it was playing at Sundance, where it was actually one of the more enjoyable films. of this year's films, I don't think many of them will really make much money. I could see that Happy Texas, although it cost $10 million, could make a lot of money because it's a very user-friendly comedy. And it's even filled with the kind of things that audiences like, alas, such as sort of jokes about people pretending to be gay. The kind of stuff I would have thought that, you know, that would have been tired 20 years ago, people still seem to be laughing at. Similarly, the film Three Seasons, I think, could make money because it actually is a very, very sweet and soft film. But in general, I think these films aren't going to be big commercial moneymakers. So films like Judy Berlin, which was much admired at the festival, I can't imagine making money when you put it out in the world. Yet the director, Eric Mendelsohn, has talent. I could see why people would back his next film. And in fact, that's the way the world used to be. It used to be that you'd make a film or two that nobody saw, and maybe nobody even distributed. And now what's happened is people make that first film, they go to Sundance, and because of the media attention, they're inflated beyond, their reputation is inflated beyond what their work can actually support.
Well, John, I want to thank you for reporting to us about the Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it.
John Powers is Fresh Air's film critic and film critic for Vogue.